Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Circuses on the air.
The president does.
Sometimes you feel like
that means that it is not illegal.
Sometimes you don't.
Tear down this wall.
Here's Jennings.
Hey, Luke. May the force be with you.
It was you, Kristen, who shot J.R.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
We're not gay. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
John's been waiting a long time to take the reins.
My name is Dave Letterman. Last night, I became a father. Thank you very much.
Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone.
George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
For the third time in six seasons, it's one goal achieved. The Chicago Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup. The Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup.
It's in time. Win the World Series. The Cubs have done it.
And now, this is history.
You're going to need outstanding hosts.
With Dave Plyer.
It's a guy, but I love you.
And Dave Schwann on 720 WGN.
Dave Schwann live in the studio. Good morning, sir.
Good morning to you, and happy Palm Sunday.
I know, I was just going to say that. Happy Palm Sunday to you as well. I do help out my church a little bit, so we
I know you
sit out table.
You help them out a lot.
I'm step back from that a little bit this year. This summer, I think that's it. 8 years.
He's made the announcement, folks. You heard it here first.
Pastoral council. I love my church. Love my pastor, but it's time. It's time.
You can only do so much.
Yeah. I don't want to hold on to the job like a pope. You know what I'm saying?
Well, we had one recently resigned.
That's right.
Not?
That's right. So. In a very rare move, yeah. I've got a ton of. We'll talk about Easter and this week in a little bit, but I want to get to some of our history stuff because
sure.
I know we're a little shorter on time today.
Yeah.
1800, the Library Congress was started with a $5,000 investment. If you can think about that, $5,000.
That was a lot of money back then.
It was. The nation's oldest federal cultural institution serves as a research arm of Congress. It also is the largest library in the world.
I was going to say, still isn't the largest, was at one time.
Books, recordings, photographs, maps, manuscripts, and its collections. It's amazing. Like, I went on a tour in D.C. a couple of years ago, and you know, you can look down into the library and the research. Oh, my God. It's spectacular.
Yeah.
Spectacular.
Yeah. And I think of the shot in All the President's Men where Robert Redford and Dustin Hoffman Woodward and Bernstein pouring over documents, and the camera moves away gradually to pull back just to show them little specks in this mammoth-sized room with documents just surrounding them.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it just is.
With just a small token of cash to open that up.
Yeah.
1865. This is always a fascinating story that we discuss. Chicago's Crosby Opera House. Do you remember this one?
Mm-hmm.
So it was beset by bad timing throughout its entire
existence. Luck from beginning to end. Yeah.
Yeah. So April 1865... with a performance by an Italian opera troupe, the premiere was postponed 3 days because of the assassination first of
Abraham Lincoln.
Crosby ran into several business difficulties as a result of what the Chicago Tribune called his disastrous failure in 1866. He was forced to sell the building. A group of prominent Chicagoans who wished to assist him arranged a sale by lottery. Tickets cost $5. Which is a lot of money back then, again, right?
Sure.
A piece, and approximately 210,000 tickets were purchased by individuals in Chicago and throughout the country.
How about that?
25,000 by Crosby himself. The selection of the winner took place in the theater in 1867 before a packed audience. The excitement in the great room was there, of course. The winner was A.H. Lee from Prairie du Rocher, Illinois.
Prairie du Rocher.
Prairie du Rocher.
Way south.
Way tip of the state
down there.
Who sold the building back to Crosby for $200,000, which was considerably less than Crosby's proceeds from the lottery. So he made money and then got to keep his opera house, which was interesting. Yeah. So it looks like his luck was better, right?
Yeah. I also think Lincoln himself was there.
Was that right?
He never came back to Chicago after being president, but mm-hmm. before he became president, he was in Chicago a lot on business and always, or many times, theater. Wanted to take time for a little entertainment, the see a show, and yeah, that's I believe cool. he was there, yes.
Well, the anticipated reopening was scheduled for October 9th, and then came the Chicago fire.
Fire, gone. Right. That was it.
And he was done. He was checked out. 1876, Chicago Cubs, first National League game in history. They beat Louisville 4-0. It was the first National League shutout. For its time.
Oh, and a heartbreaking loss for them yesterday.
It was.
Oh.
And I think about, there's a game scheduled today.
Yes.
I can't even imagine trying to be out there. It's going to be like 35 degrees and crap.
Yeah. They've played in worse.
They have. And I bet I went there for a game like the first or second week last year with my young kids. And I remember we looked at the temperature. They showed it on the screen during one of the between innings, and it was 27 degrees.
Really?
Yeah, and we were triple, maybe quadruple layered, blankets everywhere. And we were actually pretty warm. And amongst all the gloves and the hats, if everyone's watching at WGNRadio.com, Emma's shoving a hot dog in her face. Alex is eating peanuts. They're all in his hat. They're in his head. It was fantastic. It was kind of a neat to be there, though.
Well, have you seen Joe Madden wearing his stocking cap with
yeah.
the Cubs?
Oh, I'm sure. Oh, yeah. I'm sure it was. Yeah. Yeah. And I love this song, too.
Today.
This is baseball. 1935, Your Hit Parade began broadcasting. Becomes number one quickly. Was the American Bandstand and America's Top 40 program of its time.
And in the early days of TV, it was on
it
TV.
Was. Do we have a little opening?
Yeah, we have a little bit of an opening and a little bit of a clip from Christmas show.
Okay, let's listen.
On the automatic coin machines, an accurate, authentic tabulation of America's taste in popular music. Your Hit Parade.
Yeah, that's enough. We're good. It's all good. What else do we have here? 1935. We'll talk a little bit about Easter. So next week is Easter. This is Holy Week, of course. We just talked to Cardinal Blaise Cupich. Hold on one second. Back it up. So Here Comes Peter Cottontail was composed in 1950, okay? And it was due to the popularity of Gene Autry's versions of Here Comes Santa Claus and
yeah.
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and
yeah.
everything. So they said, hey, let's record an Easter song, which he did. But years later, there was a version of Peter Cottontail was produced by the same company that did Hard Rock, Coco and Joe, Susie Snowflake, mm-hmm. and Frosty the Snowman. Now, I never remembered seeing these ever in my lifetime.
Yeah, I don't remember a Peter Cottontail.
No, but apparently it did air in the mid-1950s to the early 1960s. He didn't let that one stick around for too long on Easter. But, of course, it was a tradition with the Christmas classics. I think he was trying to do the same with
same
this
one. Same with Easter, yeah.
Yeah, next week, and Curtis, I'll let you know this too, I'm off next week. John Hansen will be in for me because I'll be in for Lou Manfredini, blah, blah, blah. But we also always post that video at WGNRadio.com. But here's just a little sampling. You'll notice it's very much like the Susie Snowflake and Hard Rock, Coco and Jove. Here comes Peter Cottontail.
Hippity hop, hopping down the trail. Hippity hop, hopping down the trail.
Peter Cottontail. Hippity hopping, hopping down the trail.
Oh, oh, what a smart little bunny. Da, la, 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 da. He's the king of Rabbit Town.
Look at Peter Cottontail.
Hopping down the bunny trail.
Hippity hopping on his merry way.
Peter Cottontail.
Now, so that's that version of
boy,
that song.
Swings just like the Frosty the Snowman.
It totally
version.
Does. You know, it does. More like Frosty
yeah.
than anything. Yeah. What are you doing for Easter week? Or Easter here?
Well, a lot of work.
A lot of work? You're working, yeah.
Seriously, a number of things, actually, yeah. because this week is my dad's birthday.
How old?
He'll be 97.
Oh, man. God bless him. And happy birthday to him.
We're having a celebration actually on Tuesday.
Okay.
And then Saturday,
yeah.
they're having a very nice Easter, pre-Easter brunch.
Nice.
Where he lives
on
now.
Saturday.
Yeah. So we'll be doing that on Saturday.
Okay.
And then Sunday, I'll be here, Easter Sunday as usual.
Of course you will, yeah. Kids are off this week. We already took our vacation because my son was off a few weeks ago. You know, when those things don't align, you know, when you have more than one kid. But we'll participate in all the, you know, stuff at the Catholic Church. You know,
sure.
We'll do Holy Thursday. We'll do Good Friday. Mm-hmm. Blessing of the Baskets. And, you know, I kind of help handle hospitality. My wife is handling the decorations in the church. So, I mean, we're pretty involved next Saturday. But then Sunday morning after Mass, we host brunch for family.
Right, yeah.
Like
yeah,
an Easter brunch. Yeah. So the Polish sausage, the ham, we go the Polish route, and this whole thing, beets with horseradish, rye bread.
That sounds so good.
Colored egg bread, which is really hard to find. That what we have to go
now,
buy.
Do you cook the beets and then chill them with this horseradish?
No, you buy them that way. Yeah,
you buy them that way.
Yeah, there's horseradish and beets all together, like minced.
That
really
sounds so good.
And you put it with on your eggs. You can put it
yeah,
with whatever, yeah,
oh,
or
that
on your
sounds
bread.
Wonderful.
Yeah, and then everybody brings Easter eggs, and then we put gold dollar coins inside eggs, and we let the kids do a little Easter egg hunt
nice.
And stuff.
Yeah,
yeah. It's a nice tradition.
Yeah.
And then we drag them through Ben-Hur and the Ten Commandments for 17 hours. No, I'm kidding. We don't.
I saw the Ten Commandments in the theater.
Did you really?
Yes. That was re-released in the late 60s, early 70s, and saw that in the theater.
You know, the Pickwick Theater does that once in a while.
The Pickwick will do it.
Think, yeah, yes. They might have had Ben-Hur there a year or two ago, and we wanted to go see it. I thought, how great to see that chariot scene on the screen.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, I hope they do it again soon.
If we have a moment here, since we're talking about Easter traditions, when I was a boy, our church back home had an arrangement, and you'll love this, Dave, with a drive-in movie theater.
Oh, wow.
Where we had an open, everyone was welcome, an Easter sunrise service at the drive-in.
Oh, I've heard about these before.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
And we didn't show a movie or anything
No.
But we set up a platform, you know, toward the at the base of the screen.
Set up
a platform
where
our minister would give a sermon, go through the service, and anybody and everybody was welcome.
That's
fantastic.
You drove
in, you put the speakers.
I love that.
You know, that you would use to hear a movie, but you would instead hear the service. The choir sang.
It's brilliant.
You know.
For large crowds, what a brilliant place. Yeah.
Right. But I can remember, you know, being there, pressed into service, you might say, to hand out programs as the people
as
drove
the cars
in.
Were driving in. Wow.
And my friends and I would be out there. And as you know, we've had colder Easters than Christmases.
Oh, yeah.
So
that's cool. Where was this?
Freeze.
Was it Indiana?
Highland, Indiana.
Oh,
yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's
the drive-in was right on the border of Highland and Griffith, Indiana.
That's terrific.
And it was there for many, many years.
I know the Cascade just closed in West Chicago.
Did they?
Kills
me.
Yeah. Absolutely kills me. That was my favorite. We literally went twice a year there. It bums me out.
But we had very good attendance. It was open to everybody. So, the entire area could show up.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I've got two more things to wrap up. 1963, the Beatles met the Rolling Stones for the first time. So the Beatles and the Stones met during a Rolling Stones performance at the Crawdaddy Club. Bill Wyman says we all got nervous. But then we had
63.
63. But then we all had a chat with them afterwards and stayed up all night talking and became really good mates.
Good mates.
Good mates. They were rapping, is what they said.
Yeah.
And became really good mates.
That was before the Ed Sullivan appearance then.
Oh, yeah.
63.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Wow. 1985, Frasier Thomas died 34 years ago, and this year marks his centennial. He was born in 1919. It would have been 100.
Is that right?
Yeah. Here is, real quick, a news clip of the day, because Frasier died, I think, before the show or during the filming of a Bozo show. He collapsed in the hallway and was taken to the hospital.
I'd heard the hallway or the parking lot of WGN-TV.
Yeah, something like that. Let's take a quick listen about that day.
Tonight, WGN bids farewell to a man who, through his dedication and concern for his audience, became an institution in the entertainment business. Frasier Thomas, the longtime master of ceremonies on The Bozo Show and host of Family Classics, passed away this morning at 10:01 after suffering a major stroke here on Monday morning. He was 66 years old. A native of Rushville, Indiana, Frasier began his career at the age of 12 as a kid magician. Later, he found radio, beginning his broadcast career at WLW. In Cincinnati. And then, in 1954, Frasier moved into Chicago and on WGN launched a children's program.
There we go. So that was just a little bit of Frasier Thomas.